Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, and Phil Dierking. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and later, John Russell and Jill Robbins will bring us this week's education report. But first, North Korea may have successfully produced a nuclear weapon small enough to fit inside its missiles. That information comes from a Japanese defense paper and an American newspaper. Japan's defense ministry released its yearly report on Tuesday. The report said, "It is possible that North Korea has achieved the miniaturization of nuclear weapons and has developed nuclear warheads." In a separate story, the Washington Post reported that North Korea has successfully produced a miniaturized nuclear warhead for use in ballistic missiles. The newspaper said, "Its information came from unnamed United States intelligence officials." It said their investigation was completed last month for the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency. The paper also reported that North Korea has up to 60 nuclear weapons, more than 2 times greater than earlier estimates. Officials at the agency would not comment Tuesday on the Post report. Over the weekend, the United Nations Security Council approved new sanctions designed to punish North Korea for its latest missile test. Those measures aim to cut about $1 billion from North Korea's $3 billion in yearly earnings from exports. The North Korean government reacted to the council's vote with threats to take action against the U.S. government. North Korea also said, through its state-operated media, that sanctions will not force it to negotiate over its nuclear program. The United States, Japan, and South Korea are considered possible targets for a nuclear-armed North Korea.
Google has dismissed a male engineer who suggested that biological differences prevent women from progressing the same as men in the technology industry. The engineer, James Damore, wrote his opinion in a memo he sent last week. The document, which also criticized Google's diversity efforts, was later published online. Damore confirmed his dismissal in an email to news organizations. He said the company acted against him because he was perpetuating gender stereotypes. Google Chief Executive Officer Sundar Pichai sent a note to all company employees about the memo. He said reaction within the company had resulted in a very difficult time. He said the company strongly supports the right of all employees to express their opinions. But he noted that parts of Damore's memo had violated company policy by advancing harmful gender stereotypes in our workplace. To suggest a group of our colleagues have traits that make them less biologically suited to that work is offensive and not okay, Pichai wrote in his message. He added that the memo had affected many Google employees, some of whom are hurting and feel judged based on their gender. Damore accused Google of having a bias on the political left. He said this had created a politically correct culture that prevented honest discussion of diversity. He also attacked the idea that gender diversity should be a company goal. The distribution of preferences and abilities of men and women differ in part due to biological causes, he wrote in the memo. These differences may explain why we don't see equal representation of women in tech and leadership. Damore said he filed a case with the U.S. National Labor Relations Board accusing Google of trying to shame him into silence. He said he was also exploring possible legal action. On Tuesday, Damore received support and a job offer from Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. Censorship is for losers, Assange wrote on Twitter. Women and men deserve respect. That includes not firing them for politely expressing ideas, but rather arguing back. Publicity over the memo comes as the American technology industry has battled accusations of sexism and discrimination. The U.S. Department of Labor is currently investigating whether Google pays women less than men. The head of Uber recently lost his job after the ride-sharing company was accused of widespread sexual harassment and discrimination. I'm Brian Lynn.
The highest village in the world is running out of water. Komik sits at 4,587 meters high in the Spiti Valley of India. It can only be reached during the summer by small roads winding around the Himalaya Mountains. During the winter, temperatures can drop to 30 degrees Celsius below zero. The village is also cut off from the rest of India for 6 months of the year when snowfall blocks mountain passes. There is almost no phone and internet connectivity. We are used to being in a remote place. We have our traditional ways of living, said 32-year-old farmer Nawang Fonshok. But these days the water is not coming like it used to. We see there is less water than before. According to the World Resources Institute, India is facing a water crisis. More than half of the country's water wells have recorded a drop in water levels in the last 10 years. Up to 80% of rivers, lakes, ponds, and streams are polluted with human waste and sewage. Climate change is only making the problems worse. Overall rainfall in the last century has not been stable, and the annual average temperature has risen by 0.5 degrees Celsius, says India's meteorological department. There exists a huge knowledge gap regarding the connection between water scarcity and climate change. There is an immediate need to fill this gap and make people aware about the importance of water conservation, said WaterAid India's Puneet Srivastava. Srivastava also said the government needs better methods to regulate and monitor how groundwater resources are used. These issues create risks to food security, which affects around 200 million farm workers in the region. Thousands of farmers have committed suicide over the last 10 years as drought combined with lower global food prices have hurt farm incomes. Recently, authorities have tried to better support farmers. Some measures include providing insurance for crop failures, providing farmers with drought-resistant seeds, and a $3 billion project to clean up the Ganges, India's largest and most sacred river. Environmental experts say, however, that more focus is put on supporting India's plains, which have higher concentrations of farms and people, than on remote regions like the Himalayas. A 2014 study by Jawaharlal Nehru University said that annual temperatures in the Indian Himalayas rose by up to 2 degrees Celsius over 20 years. The study also said the glaciers have reduced by 13% over the past 50 years. Arun Sharma, a senior government official in Spiti, said, "There is no doubt there is a big water crisis here. We've put in place a lot of projects such as providing water tanks and constructing water catchment areas. But we are limited by the weather. For 6 months of the year, life stops as we are snowbound and we cannot do any major work." Experts say that changes in weather affect not only the food, water, and energy security of the people living in Himalayan villages. It also affects over 1 billion other people living across Asia who depend on rivers such as the Yangtze, Ganges, and Mekong. The melting snow and ice from the Himalayas feed these rivers and the streams and springs around Spiti Valley. Unlike other parts of India where there are two farming seasons to plant and harvest crops, Spiti only has one farming season. This creates problems for farmers if their plants die during the one season. Ishita Kana leads Ecosphere, an ecotourism company in Spiti Valley. She said there was not enough snowfall in the last 2 years and the springs all dried out in the valley. With the climate changing, this could be disastrous for people living here if this keeps happening. There should be more support for people and a deeper understanding of their way of life here. It's a very hard life. I'm Phil Dierking.
The Illinois Department of Natural Resources is returning a fish called the alligator gar to the state's rivers. Some people call the fish a living fossil. Experts believe the fish first appeared during the early Cretaceous period, more than 100 million years ago. Randy Sauer is an Illinois state fisheries biologist. He says the fish disappeared from the state's rivers in the 1990s, although they have continued to do well in southern states. Sauer says biologists want to bring the fish back to northern rivers because it is important to have top predators to balance the species below them, he said. Sports fishermen like to try to catch the alligator gar. Alligator gar are the second largest freshwater fish in North America. They can grow as large as 2.7 meters and weigh more than 136 kilograms. Sauer says their large size is one reason they disappeared in the 1990s. Experts say alligator gar are opportunistic feeders. This means they will eat almost anything, including small turtles or ducks. They also eat invasive species, such as Asian and silver carp. Sauer hopes the reintroduction of the alligator gar will help the state's efforts to control the carp. Because gar can live up to 60 years, the program will continue to increase for many years. Sauer notes that female alligator gar do not sexually mature until 11 years, and the male not till 6 or 7 years. That means the biologists will try to raise and release a lot of fish early in the program to reintroduce them. We're probably going to stock more heavily than 10 or 20 years down the road, when hopefully these fish will find each other and start doing the job on their own, Sauer says. Small devices have been placed in 7,000 of the fish so they can be observed after they are released into the waterways of Illinois. As it rains and floods, biologists expect some of the fish will follow the rivers into the states of Louisiana and Texas. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is What's Trending Today. People who live near American military bases and like to use drones should be careful. Their flying toy might become a target. A drone is a flying machine operated by a device on the ground. On Monday, the U.S. military announced new guidelines about how it may deal with private drones. Navy officer Jeff Davis is a spokesman for the United States Defense Department. He said that civilian drones in the sky could be at risk of capture or destruction. Captain Davis said the U.S. government is concerned about the safety of military sites, airplanes, and people. So, he said, it is closely watching drones. The Federal Aviation Administration estimated the number of private business drones alone could increase 10 times by 2021. Google, Amazon, and pizza delivery services have proposed using drones to reach customers. The government has announced a plan to deal with drones. It took months to negotiate. Many details are still secret about terms for capturing or destroying private drones. It is not even clear how far drones must stay from military sites to avoid being targeted. Action against drones does not have to involve firepower. The news website CNN said the U.S. Department of Defense has developed systems for bringing down drones using radio waves. The report said such systems are already in use in Syria, Iraq, and other places. The drone story led to a mixed reaction on Twitter. Several tweets suggested the military's announcement about possible downings of drones was not news. Shawnee Hyde tweeted, "Of course they can." Keith Wheeler agreed. "Sounds reasonable," he tweeted. Others wondered why homeowners cannot take similar action. Twitter user Mark Bradford said people should be able to shoot down drones flying over their property. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Like many American high school students, Josh Leong used to eat breakfast while it was still dark outside. But that changed when his high school, McLean, in the American state of Virginia, changed to a later start time 2 years ago.
The issue of school start times has become increasingly important in recent years. A growing number of sleep research studies have pointed to high schoolers' need for more sleep. The American Psychological Association, or APA, says that more than half of teens between ages 15 and 17 sleep for 7 or fewer hours per night. Teens like to stay up at night. They tend to go to bed late and wake up late in the morning. These habits are a result of biology, according to the APA. Changing the sleep schedule of teens may not work. Simply going to bed earlier does not necessarily make someone less tired in the early morning hours, says a statement on the organization's website. The American Medical Association, or AMA, has also advocated for later start times. At last year's annual AMA meeting, board member William E. Kobler said, "Sleep deprivation is a growing public health issue affecting our nation's adolescents, putting them at risk for mental, physical, and emotional distress and disorders." In 2016, the group issued a new policy proposal that encourages middle schools and high schools to start no earlier than 8:30 a.m.
While the medical community has largely supported later start times, Americans do not always agree on the issue. American schools are separated into districts. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are over 14,000 school districts in the country. Each district has its own governing body, which sets school start and end times and other important school policies. Some have opposed the adoption of later times on the grounds that after-school sports will suffer. The Atlantic reports on strong opposition to later start times in the American state of New Jersey. It seems like there's a disconnect here between the people who are making the decisions and the kids who actually want to play sports, said Rich Perello, a parent and opponent of later start times. Others have opposed the adoption of later start times because they believe schools are adopting later start times without enough planning. Greg Lindner is a school board director in the Unionville-Chads Ford School District in the state of Pennsylvania. He voted against the adoption of later start times. Lindner says he believes the scientific evidence about the benefits of later start times. But, he said, it would have been better for the district to adopt the later start time after careful consideration. He felt there was a rush to implementation. Lindner's main concern was logistics. Logistics refers to the things that must be done to plan and organize a complicated activity or event that involves many people. Lindner's school district, Unionville-Chads Ford, is very large, about 77 square miles, or about 200 square kilometers. School buses must travel far to pick up students. Many teachers live outside the district. Later start times mean they might have to travel during peak traffic times. In addition, many of the teachers have children themselves. Their children might study in different school districts that have different start times. It is impactful, Lindner noted. Lindner said he would have preferred adopting later start times in the 2018-2019 school year instead of the upcoming 2017-2018 school year.
Phyllis Payne is the implementation director for Start School Later, an advocacy group. She agrees that school districts can and should plan for these logistical problems. Payne notes that Americans already expect change in school schedules when their children move from elementary to middle and high schools. American districts often have different start times for each of these types of schools.
The biggest challenge is people do not like change, like to protect ourselves from change. So when we hear that something new is coming, our immediate gut reaction is to say, I don't want this, this is going to be bad. And we speculate about what's going to be different and how it's going to be hard for us.
Payne adds that culture plays a role in how different people think about later start times. What might seem reasonable in one place might not seem reasonable in another.
The definition of later varies from culture to culture. When I talk to friends who've lived in England, for example, who then come back here after having the high school experience in England, they're very shocked at how early we start, how short of a time we give the kids for lunch. There's interesting cultural differences.
Sleep experts, notably in the UK, have called for school start times as late as 10 or 11 a.m., according to The Guardian. Josh Leung, the student at McLean High School, likes his school's new start time of 8:05 a.m.
I think I appreciate the fact that I get to wake up a little bit more with the light. I get to wake up with the sunrise. I'm not trying to make my breakfast in the darkness.
He said, if you get a good night's sleep, your next day at school is significantly better. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.